behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben, not a royal, Bolin.
Not a royal. Very important distinction to make in this episode, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now, this is the second time we're going to dip into the book that you gave me for your birthday, which you'll have to listen to a previous episode to understand what that means exactly. But thanks again.
Hey, thank
and,
you.
And it's called Strange But True Tales of Car Collecting. It's by Keith Martin. And there was a very interesting story in here about the Sultan of Brunei and his car collection.
Yeah, so a lot of people listening here have probably heard of the country Brunei, but may not know too much about it. Brunei does have a sultan. That is not an anachronism or a joke that we're making. Brunei is a sovereign state. It's on the north coast of Borneo. They're in Southeast Asia, and it's got a coastline with the South China Sea. But other than that, it's completely surrounded by Malaysia. So it's this one little spot of Malaysia that is its own place with a sultan and with some massive oil wealth.
I've heard it described as an island within an island.
That's a very good description.
But it does have that beautiful coast as well. And there's some interesting stuff that goes on in Brunei, right? I mean, the industry that mainly feeds into the economy of Brunei would be oil and gas, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep,
so,
absolutely.
So the sultan is profiting from the oil and gas, right?
Right. At one time, fun fact for all you listeners out there, the Sultan of Brunei was the world's richest individual, the richest man on earth, as far as we can estimate.
What, valued at something like, I mean, his net worth is somewhere in the neighborhood of like $20 billion or something like that.
With a B.
With a B, that's right. So you're talking about huge, huge amounts of money, and I'd like to talk about his palace at some point, but maybe not yet because I want to kind of lead into the story and get a kind of a groundwork for what we're talking about here, because the story in the book is called A Princely Collection Rots. And that kind of hints at what we're going to talk about today. But I think that we need to talk about, you know, how many cars are rumored to be in this prince's collection, right? Or the or rather the sultan's collection. And I've seen estimates, Ben, that run the gamut here. I mean, everything from at the low end, 2,000 cars.
Right. That's the one I see most often.
Which is a lot of cars.
Still.
2,000 cars. And, you know, these aren't ordinary cars, as we'll discuss.
These aren't Corollas.
I've also seen it estimated at 7,000 cars. Now, that's a little high, I think. I don't think that it's 7,000. I've seen numbers anywhere in between as well. You know, like 5,000 cars, 4,500 cars.
Right.
But it seems to me that between 2,000 and 3,000 cars is about what we're talking about here. And there's some credible, you know, some credible sources that we can point to that will show us that 2,000 is pretty likely in this case.
That's true. And that seems like a lot of cars, sure, to ordinary non-sultans like you and I and probably the majority of our listeners to go out on a limb. However, let's also consider just how well Brunei and therefore the royal family have been doing. In 2011, the IMF estimated that they were one of only two countries with a public debt at 0% of the national GDP.
Really?
Yeah, the other country was Libya. And then Forbes also ranked Brunei as the fifth richest nation in the world.
Not bad.
Based on their petroleum and gas. So really, 2,000 to 3,000 cars, if you're the guy in charge of that, while it may be excessive, it's certainly not denting your wallet.
Oh, but this brings about a myriad of nightmares, right? I mean, there's so much that has to happen in order to keep those 2,000 to 3,000 cars operational, right?
Sure.
And storing them and the mechanics that go along with it. And just, there's so much. And the location of Brunei. I mean, this is a very, you know, wet, humid, hot region as part of this part of the world, and it's got to be difficult to keep cars maintained in that area.
And
right?
The cars have to be flown in. And let's not forget, for any listeners who have checked out our podcast on the world's most expensive oil change, some exotic cars have to be flown back to the manufacturer for maintenance.
And these are exotics because this whole collection, as you would guess, is not, you know, your run-of-the-mill car. It's not anything that you know, you or I would be driving, Ben.
Not many Hondas or Monte Carlos.
No. There's exotics, and I mean the top-end exotics and, you know, custom one-offs that come from the factories. And we'll talk about those as well when we get to this. Not just bespoke, but even beyond that. I don't know if there is a beyond that, but it seems like there is in this case because of some of the extreme, extravagant examples that we'll talk about. So Let's just talk just for 1 second, Ben, about the Sultan himself, because he's 68 years old. Mm-hmm. He's the 29th Sultan of Brunei, because this is an office that, you know, when you hold it, you're called the Sultan of Brunei. But I guess he went to the throne after his father abdicated the throne, right? And it was something like 1967. So the Sultan has been in power for a long, long time. Again, $20 billion net worth, that's estimated, you know, give or take $500 million, I think is what they say. He lives in a palace that is pretty incredible. Now, the palace has something like 1,788 rooms in this palace, Ben.
Yep.
Nearly 1,800 rooms. He has three wives. He has eight children. I would expect he'd have more children. I don't know why I thought that, but more than eight.
I mean, eight legit children.
I guess so. Yeah, that's like, oh, also, he's on the money, you know, like on the coins.
Right.
So you kind of get the idea of where we're going at this, right? I mean, it's kind of an ultimate power position.
I mean,
right?
That's making it when your face is on the money.
It really is. Now, you would think that this guy would be the one with all the cars, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it turns out that according to you know, the guy that we're going to talk about in just a minute, it turns out that the cars don't necessarily belong to the Sultan. Now, I'm sure that the Sultan owns many, many exotic and luxury vehicles, ultimate luxury vehicles. However, this collection, the one that we typically see photos of or, you know, have heard about, belongs to his brother, his third brother, Prince Jeffrey.
Ah, yes, the notorious playboy of Brunei, mm-hmm. Prince Jeffrey, that's J-E-F-R-I, although some sources say he preferred to be called Robin, which we'll get to in a moment.
Robin?
Yeah. Oh, hang on, buddy. You'll like that part.
I didn't know that.
So Prince Jeffrey is the youngest. He is about 59 at the time of this recording. And you will often hear hyperbolic things about him, such as he is the man who has gone through the most cash on earth. People call him, you know, they call him a playboy because he lives a life of luxury, but he also has held positions in the government of Brunei. You know, he has a job.
Yeah, sure he does. And that's kind of the downfall of Prince Jeffrey, because this story doesn't end up so well. I mean, I guess, modern day, they've seen him around in Brunei, so he's not like he's disappeared or anything like that. But there were some bad times for Prince Jeffrey following the very, very good times.
Right.
So
yeah.
he was, I guess, the Minister of Finance for Brunei all the way up until about 1997. And he controlled the revenue from oil and gas through the BIA, which is Brunei Investment Authority, and a complete network of companies under the name of Amadeo.
Mm-hmm.
And he, along the way, he's making millions and millions and millions of dollars, if not billions,
right,
at this point. And he had a taste for exotic and fine automobiles, and it was really kind of an endless obsession with him to get more and better vehicles along the way.
Yes, kind of similar to the Schlumpf obsession that we talked about in an earlier episode.
Exactly, but the problem with this one, I don't know if it's a problem, but the accelerant in this one is that he had virtually endless cash to do what he wanted.
Right, whereas the Schlumpfs were limited by the revenue of their textile business.
Somewhat, right?
Yes, yeah, somewhat.
Somewhat, as was Prince Jeffrey, somewhat.
Because, yeah, but there are two different somewhats there.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, the whole thing, the downfall of this whole thing, because there was some dirtiness going on here as well, Ben.
Right, yeah. He was embezzling. Now, there's a difference here, a distinction that we should make. Now, Scott, you and I come from the United States, so we don't have legally speaking, have a royal family. I would say there are aristocrats of sorts here, and there are people who are born into like a higher likelihood of having a political position or something, but we don't have kings and queens and princes and princesses and all that jazz. So it can be difficult for us as Westerners to understand, you know, how is this not embezzling? You know, but the thing is, in some places, that money does belong to the royal family.
Well, there's a little more leeway given in situations like that. I understand that. I get it. And I know the rules are slightly different. Well, or sometimes really different, but here's what happened, Ben. In the financial crisis in Asia in 1997 triggered the same financial crisis in Brunei.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this caused an audit to happen of the BIA books.
Right. The firm Arthur Anderson was ordered by the Sultan himself to audit the books of the Brunei Investment Authority, and they found that between 1983 and 1998, some $40 billion in what was called special transfers were made by the BIA, and that Prince Jeffrey had personally squandered $14.8 billion of that $40 billion.
What is going on here? Because between 1983 and 1998, I mean, that's 15 years, right?
Yeah.
All right, 15 years, you're spending nearly $15 billion. I mean, I would think that it would be difficult to spend $1 billion a year. I mean, but maybe I'm way off on the spend, but I would think it would be actually kind of hard to do that.
Yeah, you'd have to be creative and driven, honestly.
I think you would, but when we talk about the car collection alone, I mean, I know that there's a whole lifestyle that goes along with all of this, right? I mean, but okay, we're getting beyond ourselves here. Let me back it up for a second.
Right,
I just wanted to say that the Amadeo Investment Group collapsed because it had about $10 billion in debt, and then there were some investments, or you know what, I shouldn't say investments. I guess there were some properties that Prince Jeffrey had to return to the Brunei government.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these properties included things like, well, he had to return more than 2,000 cars. That's one thing, right?
Yep.
Now, I don't understand how that works. We'll talk about that maybe in a little while, but hundreds of paintings.
Five yachts.
Yeah, that's right. And 9 world-class aircraft. And when we say world-class aircraft, we're talking about, like, you know, you got a 747.
Yeah.
And everything is gold and crystal. And the finest of rugs on the floor. And
it's
just
a mansion in the sky.
It's amazing. If you ever see some of these pictures, I guess, of the aircraft that he has not restored, but more or less, redone, I guess. Well, how do you want to say that, maybe?
I would say, well, they are bespoke.
Bespoke.
Modified. Well, yeah. Modified doesn't quite cut it.
No, I wouldn't say so. When you see the inside of these, it's just incredible. So anyways, take a look at those. But, you know, 9 world-class aircraft. Of course, there's court documents that say, you know, you got to return $78 million worth of cars to an Italian design house, you know, for having custom-built Ferraris.
Pininfarina Spa.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Also, $475 million back to Rolls-Royce. For bespoke automobiles as well, and $900 million to a British jeweler.
Yes.
So that's the stuff he just had to return. Now, I can't imagine having that much plus more. That's just the things that the court said you have to give this stuff back.
So let's, while we're here and we're talking about excess, before we get to the cars, I do have an interesting side note for you here.
All right.
Now, this is a family show, so let's keep this next part clean. Scott. Prince Jeffrey, in addition to his love of cars and his huge collection of cars, had a harem.
Did he really?
In the 80s and 90s, that was still happening.
Hmm.
And there's a lady who came from New Jersey named Jillian Lauren, and she wrote a book about her time in Prince Jeffrey's harem.
Now, this is interesting because I had always heard that the Sultan had a harem. And it was kind of an infamous tale, I guess, that the Sultan had a harem, but I'd never heard that Prince Jeffrey had a harem. Maybe it was him and not the Sultan.
Oh, yeah, maybe it's like the cars, huh? You don't know?
Maybe, I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. The stories that we heard, that's how I got the name Robin, because according to the author of Some Girls, My Life in a Harem, he enjoyed being called, like, he wanted people to call him Robin, and it was one of the vanity license plates on his rolls.
Oh, no
one
kidding.
Of his rolls. So that is seen as corroborating evidence. But she left the harem eventually. You know, she was there consensually. And when she came back and she wrote the book, she later married the bass player of Weezer.
That's a strange side note.
That's the end of the story.
That is weird. Now, I know that, you know, some of the people that were being attracted to this type of lifestyle were like former Miss USA pageant winners and things like that, right?
Right, yeah. Ex-Miss USA Shannon Marketic returned from Brunei in 1997, and she sued both Prince Jeffrey and the Sultan. She claimed that she was held against her will. Jeffrey claimed, Prince Jeffrey, that is, claimed diplomatic immunity.
Interesting. All right. So, a little bit of hinky business going on there at the palace. And, you know, I don't know if this actually happened at the palace, at the Sultan of Brunei's palace.
Right. Because remember, even just the property he had to return 500 pieces of property in Brunei, right?
Yeah, that's right. And that is Prince Jeffrey's property.
Right.
The Sultan. Can I just mention his palace before we move on?
Yeah, let's do it.
I want to get to this car collection. I really do. And the tale of, Michael Sheehan, but I think we should talk about the palace just for a second as a side note, because there's some interesting
amazing
stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's the official residence of the Sultan of Brunei. You would understand that, right? I mean, it's the seat of the Brunei government,
mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like right there in Brunei's capital. The construction was completed in 1984, and it cost $1.4 billion U.S. dollars to build this thing. It is the largest residential palace in the world and the largest single-family residence ever built, ever.
So throughout all of human history.
Correct. And I'll tell you how big this is. It has 2,000, you know, I'm starting to read 2,000. It's 2,152,782 square feet of floor space.
Wow.
So, you know, when, you know, you're going to buy a house here locally, you're like, well, it's got about 900 square feet or, you know, 1,800 square feet or whatever it is. This is 2.1 million square feet of floor space in this place. Now, it has 1,788 rooms, as I mentioned before.
Yep.
That includes 257 bathrooms, a banquet hall that can be expanded to accommodate up to 5,000 guests at a time.
What? Why?
Big dinners.
I mean, yeah, I guess if you're the Sultan.
I guess so. I don't know if I've ever known 5,000 people combined over my whole life. I don't think so. All right, so he also has a mosque, which can accommodate 1,500 people. That's pretty big as well.
That makes sense, too.
And this is interesting. The palace also has a 110-car garage. Now, that right away tells you that maybe all those cars aren't his, but I'm sure they're outbuildings and things like that, right?
Right.
But this palace itself has a 110-car garage. It also has an air-conditioned stable for the Sultan's 200 polo ponies.
Hang on. Wait. Polo ponies?
Polo ponies in the palace.
Polo ponies in the palace.
Yeah, 200 of them.
Wow.
Yeah, 200 ponies.
All right, how many do you need for a game of polo?
I don't know. And if you want to go swimming, he's got 5 swimming pools. So this is a big place. You get the idea, yeah, right?
Right.
I mean, it has 18 elevators. You know, it goes on to like the number of light bulbs. It has 51,000 light bulbs in the palace.
Well, it's also, I know it sounds ridiculous, but if it really is so big, then it kind of makes sense that there would be more than one swimming pool and things like that, because otherwise it would be a long, long walk.
Yeah, you'd have a hike to get to wherever you're going. Yeah. That would be troublesome.
So I think we've done an okay job of putting the lifestyle right here mm-hmm. in perspective, because, you know, the first question is, like, how could somebody walk away from these amazing vehicles? Ladies and gentlemen, Prince Jeffrey's expenses had been estimated at $50 million a month at one point.
$50 million a month. That's amazing.
And that's an estimate.
Again, how the heck do you do that? But I think that you do that by going to some of these luxury automakers and mm-hmm. sports car makers and saying, I want this. I need them all to fit me, and I want one of every color once you make it. That kind of thing. And that happened often as we go through this story.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find that he goes to Rolls-Royce and says, I'm going to order $900 million worth of Rolls-Royce cars, and I want all of them different, and I want them I will work with the designers and how to lay them out. He does the same thing at Ferrari, does the same mm-hmm. thing at Bentley. I mean, it's just across the board, just throwing cash at them.
And now we have set the stage, and we are entering a fantastic story by Michael Sheehan.
Yeah. Now, of course, all these rumors and everything, you know, online, print, word of mouth, all this. But Michael Sheehan, to me, has the most credible story of this collection
and
what he saw, because he was invited there to see the collection, or to buy a couple of cars from the collection, because Michael Sheehan is he's an owner and operator of a site called FerrarisOnline.com. And he's a Ferrari historian, a race car driver, a columnist, and an exotic car broker. So, you know, you want a Ferrari, you can go to him. Mm-hmm. He happened to get an invite to come and look at a couple of vehicles, more than a couple. I think he was invited to look at like 14 or 15 cars.
13 Ferraris and McLaren F1s.
Okay. So you know, he's invited to see a specific set of vehicles within the prince's collection in 2002. And so this is, you know, 12 years ago at this point. And what he saw there was absolutely astounding.
Right. Yeah. After the negotiations, he agreed to buy two McLarens, Ferraro F40LM, 288 GTO. And those were for his clients. And he also had an option to buy another 16 McLarens and Ferraris. But when he got there, he stayed at a really swank place called the Empire Hotel. This was also built by Prince Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. It has, let's see, Scott, it cost $1.1 billion to build. He describes it as beyond opulent. And even though, he says, the Empire was built to accommodate over 1,000 guests, I never saw more than a dozen people in the hotel at any time.
How weird. Now, I looked at photos of the Empire Hotel.
It's beautiful.
It's amazing. It really is. And beyond opulent is a great way to describe it. It's a bit gaudy, I guess, in the way that, you know, it's overdone, really. But
yeah.
It's gorgeous. It's huge. And again, there's nobody there. He also mentions that he went to a place called Jaradong Park.
Uh-huh.
And that is the largest, most expensive amusement park in all of Southeast Asia. But he says it was also completely, almost abandoned. I mean, there were very, very few people there. The thing is about that park has been that's also free to go and visit. I mean, you don't have to pay anything to go into this amusement park.
Right. Yeah.
And I think there have been different periods where they charge you a little bit. They don't charge you anything. But it's also built by Prince Jeffrey, mm-hmm. you know, of course, cost him $1 billion again. But again, there's no admission being charged to this, and it's almost empty. It's how strange is that?
Yeah. Do you think the Empire Hotel is tacky, though?
I think a little bit. Yeah,
really?
I think a little bit. It's a little bit overdone for me.
I mean, it's not what I would do. I'll admit that.
Mm-hmm, sure.
You know, I don't like a whole lot of flash, but I thought it was, I would stay there.
Well, it's pretty, I know, but, you know, there's probably a good reason that there's not many tourists in Brunei, right?
Ah, that is true. As a Muslim country, Brunei has a couple of laws that might turn off some, jet setters from other countries. One of the big ones being that there is no alcohol allowed. It is forbidden. It is haram. There's no nightlife, really.
Mm-hmm. Because there's no alcohol.
Well, you know, I don't know if that's a one-to-one link.
Now, maybe.
Maybe. But also, as Sheehan says, he saw virtually no tourists. Mm-hmm. So that was counterintuitive to me because Brunei is a place that I would love to visit, you know?
Well, maybe, yeah. But I think the vast majority of people are looking for something to do in the evening as well. And if there's almost no nightlife, you know, there, if there's almost, there's no alcohol there.
Right.
I wonder what other strict laws there are that, you know, we as Westerners might not understand, you know, mm-hmm. until you really dig into the country and realize like, well, I'm there. I can't do this. I can't do mm-hmm. this. And I'm normally accustomed to doing that, you know, when I'm on vacation.
Well, probably, violating Ramadan is a big deal. You
probably.
Know, eating during the forbidden time there. Yeah, you're right. There, it's always a good idea. A lot of our listeners, you know, have traveled to other countries. So everybody hopefully knows this. Whenever you're going somewhere, do your research first because it's easy to accidentally break a law.
Yeah, but I totally agree with you. I think this would be a fascinating place to visit. I mean, it looks beautiful from all the photos that I've mm-hmm. seen. I mean, it's got a great location, right?
Yeah.
The climate's a little hot and humid for someone like me, but then again, so is Florida and I go there.
Yeah, it's true. Now, Michael Sheehan, though, is no ordinary person, as we said, and he's not being treated as one. The Brunei family sends a bodyguard to pick him up mm-hmm. and to take him to visit this car collection. They go to a compound down the coast, and it's surrounded by high walls, topped with razor wire, bomb-proof front gate. When they get inside, they have to turn in their passports and their cameras.
This is so much like a military complex, isn't it? I mean, mm-hmm. that's essentially what it is, really. And the other thing is that, you know, he's extremely lucky, I guess, to have been selected to see this car collection
that's
at all.
Winning a lottery, really.
It really is, because very few people have seen the extent of the car collection. They'll see them one at a time, you know, with Prince Jeffrey as he makes a trip to London or, you know, wherever. But you're not going to get you're not gonna be able to grasp the full collection all at one time. So here he is. He's being invited into the compound. They went through many, many buildings, right?
Yeah. It reminds me of like the Cave of Wonders in all the old fairy tales. Yeah. They went through, at first they went through one 2-story building. Then they went through another one and there were 120 cars on each level. Mm-hmm. Then they went to another one.
Yeah.
Then they went to another one.
Yeah, there were eight. There were a total of eight two-story buildings, each of them about 250 feet long by 60 feet wide, and each level held 120 cars. So right there, that's a huge bit of the collection. Now, he said each level had a semblance of a theme. So, you know, just sort of a theme, but not entirely a theme, I guess. You know, like one building was filled with Porsches from 959s up to the late 1990s. And then another floor held mainly black-on-black Mercedes from, you know, the mid-1990s. You know, they were all 500 sedans. Then, you know, another building held Coach-built Rolls-Royces, Bentleys, Aston Martins. And then another building that held, you know, 1990 model Ferraris. You know, just really, really strange setup of vehicles. And they did have a grouping, I guess, that were, sure, that were similar, but there was, they said like a theme. He didn't collect like, popular race cars from the 1960s in this building. He had all of one kind in one building.
Right. Yeah. And also he had an experimental wing. That's what I'm going to call it. Mm-hmm. Although Sheehan doesn't call it that. He had, a building with 550s and 456s, and some of the 550s had the experimental X-Track automatic gearboxes, and he says that six of them, get this, were coated in radar-reflective matte black coatings and fitted with infrared cameras for, I can only imagine, stealth night driving.
Kind of strange, huh?
I think that's cool. I'm going to say it, man. I feel like this guy has good taste in cars.
And this is the 1990s.
Yeah, so okay, this really is some Knight Rider stuff.
Well, this isn't like the Rainbow Chic collection that we saw. Remember that? This is another level. This is different,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, this is a little more performance-oriented. I think the Rainbow Chic is more of an aesthetic.
And thing. I know we sound like we're just going through all these, but you have to get an idea, a picture of what they see here. So, you know, one of the lower floor areas revealed that there were rows, and I mean rows of right-hand drive Ferrari Testarossas and 512s and 512Ms. And another building contained almost all coach-built Ferraris.
Also, a lot of those are right-hand drive. That's why he had to pay so much.
Yeah, that's right. And a couple of, get this, this is so weird. Now, I'm skipping over a bunch of them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
There were some station wagon Ferraris that were right in there as well that were kind of one-offs that Ferrari built specifically for him. There were a pair of what they call mythoi, which is really, I guess, the plural of mythos vehicles.
Yeah.
And if you look up Ferrari mythos, you'll see that it's really not, they're not as ugly as the one that is called the F90. But these are concept vehicles from Ferrari that the prince owns.
Yeah.
So his collection has got some really unusual vehicles. There was one, what he'll call a token Enzo era Ferrari, and that was a right-hand drive 275 GTS.
Yeah.
Now, if you go through these eight buildings, Ben, then there is a large, I guess, glass-walled showroom that held three McLaren F1s. That's three McLaren F1s. Did you hear me correctly?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's
amazing
right there. All right. A 288 GTO Evo, an F50, and an F40 LM.
Oh, now let's talk about this F40 LM, too, because it's black on black. So black paint, black leather interior, red piping, power windows, AC. But he said, this is where he noticed something. Now, you talked earlier. We mentioned that Brunei has a very hot, humid climate.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed that the air conditioning in this amazing garage of wonders, which I'll call it now.
This glass showroom.
Yeah. The AC is off.
Yeah. There's no air conditioning happening in there. And, you know, we mentioned the hot, humid conditions in Brunei.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think that our listeners probably know where this story is going already, but, the cars are suffering some signs of neglect.
Right. Yeah. Because they're in the wrong environment for preservation. And secondly, it looks like they're not getting all the maintenance that they need, right?
Mm-hmm. I'll say we'll talk about maintenance in just a minute because we'll find out what's going on there in just a second, but the tour continues.
Yeah, the tour is not over. At the back of the compound, there are two other two-story buildings, about 50 feet apart, and they're very long. They had a corrugated tin roof between them, right?
Yeah. So this is more of a carport rather than a garage.
Yeah.
Or a building.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. And it shelters them from, you know, some of the worst of the sunlight, but it's not the best thing for, the rain. So under this shade, literally, Scott, just parked out under this beat up tin roof. There were 300 500 SELs and SLs.
Oh, it's amazing. And the thing is, all of them are black on black, and a lot of them have the windows down. And we mentioned that, you know, the rain is allowed to just get underneath this roof. And, of course, you know, there's monsoons, I guess, that happen there. You know, it's there's the rainy season, right? And,
yeah.
And the thing is, with the windows down and the heat and the humidity and everything, these cars are just rotting away.
And they've got bespoke interiors, too, you guys. So a lot of these are AMG specials, which means they have wood or carbon fiber trim.
Yeah, these are rare collectible vehicles. These are not like just the ones that you would go into the dealership and buy off the showroom floor. These are ones that have additional touches.
A lot of these are one of a kind.
Again, AMG motors in some of these things. And you mentioned the interior treatments and millions and millions of dollars of beautiful, rare collector vehicles that are just left out into the, I guess, the open sea air. I don't know what better way to describe that, Ben. I mean, they're just rotting away.
Yeah. There's an illustrative example here. It's going to be a little sad for me as well.
Sure.
This Rolls Royce convertible. Beautiful car.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Mid-1990s.
Yep. And the rolls have become so hot with the windows up, this one had its windows up, that the steering wheel's foam padding melted into a puddle on the driver's seat. The leather wrap hung down from the barren steel rim. And he has an interesting comparison.
Sure. Yeah.
That I'm not going to read on family.
We'll say it was like a deflated airbag. How about that?
That's perfect.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And the entire interior, says Michael, was fuzzy with mold from the heat and the humidity. And that's the thing that gets me, man, is that, you know, even down here, down south, we know that if you leave a car out too long in the heat, with the windows up over summer, it's going to damage the car. The interior will crack. It is quite possible, especially if moisture gets in, that mold will grow. Animals of all sorts will find their way inside. And, you know, that's a tragedy when it happens to someone's daily driver. These are works of art, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, he's describing this one as having, that Rolls-Royce had a gray, furry blanket of mold and moss over it. How disgusting is that? I mean, that's so bad. I just can't tell you how bad this is. Now, you remember the cars we were just talking about, the 300 Mercedes that were lined up?
Mm-hmm.
He said they called that area the reef. And he said that's because the only use or the only possible use for all of those Mercedes now is to be used as an artificial reef somewhere offshore.
But the tour's not over yet.
No, there's even more. There's even more than that. So this is crazy. You go into a single-story building that holds another 60 what he calls truly unique cars. And some of these, or most of these, are in a very bright yellow color, which, okay, now we're getting back into the
chic
the
territory.
Rainbow chic territory. Yeah, that's right. But, boy, this, including a row of four-wheel drive Bentley station wagons, a dozen late model Lamborghinis, a few non-yellow cars, like a 456 Venice wagon, which, again, this is a 456 Venice Ferrari station wagon. If most people probably haven't even really heard about these.
Yeah.
It's kind of a one-off thing. Only seven were built. And, of course, these were all ordered by the prince, and he bought them for all totaled, I guess. Eventually, they figured out how much these were worth because of what it cost to build the seven. $1.5 million each.
Wow.
Yeah. And now they're just left there rotting. Okay. So, there's also a side room that was filled with high-end motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
And another room, this is strange, another room that was filled with hundreds of empty Rolex, Cartier, and,
Patek Philippe.
Yeah. There you go. Patek Philippe. I can't even say it.
I'm probably mispronouncing it too.
That's right. But the empty watch presentation boxes. Now that's strange, right? I wonder what's going on there. He probably has been giving these watches to people and just dumping the watch boxes.
His gifts
in this room. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he's giving them away. Maybe it's in case someone wants to return it. I don't know.
Maybe a big party. He's like, I'm going to need 1,000 Rolex watches with this design, and I'm going to give one to every guest. You know, that kind of thing.
That's pretty cool.
And then this is the room where the presentation boxes ended up.
But the tour is not over yet.
Yeah.
Which I'll be saying a couple more times.
There's even more.
Yeah. Behind one of the buildings, they have a, now you guys are probably hip to the game here. You go, okay, those are the first string cars. Where's the second string batch? They're behind one of the buildings. These are a row of lesser cars, including And I love how every so often he says token. Mm-hmm. He's like, including the token Corvette. But these, being unprotected, were destroyed by the sun and the rain. The mechanics deserted the collection in 1998, you know, a year after that financial crisis.
Yeah. See, now this is it. 1998. The collection has been abandoned by the mechanics since 1998, and that's where it all fell apart. And this is 2002. So, you know, this is only 4 years later that he's seen this collection, and this is the condition it's in.
And I'm going to quote him directly for this next line. What had once been the planet's largest collection of coach-built and high-end exotics was now a vast automotive tomb, patrolled only by a few Gurkhas with dogs.
Wow. Oh, man. Unbelievable. I mean, and to think that, again, this is only 4 years later, and now here we are. What year are we in? 2014?
Yes, yes.
So this is 12 years beyond that. So we're talking 16 years now. These cars have not really been maintained or anything like that. So, you know, they're just sitting there rotting. They're still there as far as I know.
Right.
Now, I believe that a few of them, have been given to locals. You know, locals have been, gifted some of the, I'll call them lesser Mercedes models, you know, that, maybe the AMG models or something.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. But, aside from that, most of the collection is still there because, you know, he saw several hundred, if not several thousand cars during this trip, right? This Michael Sheehan did. And, you know, he noted that none of them had titles and, you know, he's there trying to buy several of them. So he did say that, you know, I want to select a couple of these vehicles, not all of them that he's shown,
yeah,
you know, to bring back. I want to import them to the United States for sale. He wanted to note that, you know, none of them had titles and attaining a bill of sale or export documents was nearly impossible because, what he called the mid-level bureaucrats were paralyzed by indecision of the fear of making a political mistake and issuing export paperwork. So,
right.
I kind of understand that, you know, that, they don't want to, you know, get rid of the stuff, but I mean, look at the condition it's in. It's going to a better place, but you can't really look at it that way, maybe.
Well, also, you know, this is the Royal Car Collection or one of.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want to mess with it at all unless I was explicitly told that it was okay to get rid of it.
No, but see, that's the thing. Like, why not? Why would Prince Jeffrey not, you know, come forward and say, you know, I agree to the export of these vehicles. I authorize this purchase. But then again, you know, he probably just doesn't care about them at this point. I mean, this is a collection that's worth billions of dollars.
Yeah.
It's something that he was forced to give back to the government, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, that was maybe the thing, Ben. Remember early we said that these are the assets that he was forced to give back?
Yep.
He doesn't really own them anymore, so maybe he can't even intervene and say, like, I authorize a sale. It's probably just a government legislation nightmare to get these things out.
And if you also think about it, there's a bit of a catch-22. If the question is, well, why doesn't the Sultan say, this get rid of these cars? The catch-22 here is, who's going to go to the Sultan and say, you know, pardon me, Your Highness,
yeah,
I know that you're running the country, but those are some sweet Mercedes, and I'd kind of like to sell them.
Yeah, you remember how your brother kind of screwed things up
about
15 years ago?
I feel like that is that is a no-go.
Yeah, you would definitely not say that. Now, Okay, so Michael kind of wraps this whole thing up, and I'll have kind of a wrap of my own here, but
yeah.
He kind of wraps things up by saying that although his trip to Brunei was an amazing cultural and an automotive experience, of course, because he saw cars that he didn't even know existed, really. They were never able to get a single car out of the collection because of that paperwork nightmare. And he says, you know, at the time when this was written, it was 8 more years, but it's longer than that now. It's 12 years, 12 more years in a steamy, tropical, rainforest-type environment. None of those cars are even savable at this point because when it was just 4 years on after the mechanics had left, most of them were unsavable at that point. So, you know, here we are, well, geez, I want to say 16, 17 years later, pretty much all hope is given up at this point.
I mean, the rainforest is like any other forest, man. If you leave something in it long enough, it's going to eat it.
Nature always conquers. You know, Ben, whenever I'm listening to like home repair type shows on the weekends and stuff, and I do that because I'm a middle-aged guy. I do that. So, you know, anytime anybody brings up water issues, you know, the mantra is always, you know, water always wins. And
it's true.
And nature always wins as well. I mean, it just seems to take over. We've all seen the program. What is it? Like, the world or the Earth after humans or something Earth after man.
Yeah.
I forget what it's called.
It's like
exactly.
Earth without us or after us.
Like how long will things last just on their own? And it's not very long.
No. As a matter of fact, not to be too survivalist about it, but if you live in the United States and things go to pot, then your best bet for continuous energy is probably the Hoover Dam.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
That's my one takeaway from that immensely depressing show.
I know, it is depressing. You're right. All right, so let's move back here, because I've got kind of a small wrap-up, unless there's more that you'd like to add about the collection at this point, but I can kind of sum up what he saw, really.
And let's hear that.
Okay, so just kind of going through this and drawing out a quick outline of what he saw. The compound contains at least, you know, this is just what he reported, 8 two-story buildings, a large glass-walled showroom, a windowless theater, which I don't even know if we mentioned that or not, 2 long two-story buildings with very little cover, a single-story building with mostly yellow cars, a side room with high-end motorcycles. All of these are packed with exotics and rare vehicles and even a few bespoke, I guess what we'll call ordinary cars as well. So again, none of these have been started even since 2002. That was what, 5 years at that point, or
right.
4 years at that point. 16 years they haven't run even. 300 Mercedes SLs and SELs. I mean, hundreds of Ferraris and Bentleys and Porsches and Rolls Royces.
Yeah.
Just Jaguars. And even there, I think there's even a Koenigsegg that I've seen mentioned in there.
Mm-hmm.
So some newer vehicles. And I'm questioning the Koenigsegg thing. I wonder if that's part of his or not, or the Sultan's.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But here's the thing. Those cars have not really moved. You know, a couple have gone one place or the other, but as we said, most of them are still in that compound.
And I hope that they have gifted some of those to the locals, you know, the Mercedes.
Yeah.
Like they said that, you know, some of them were given away, and I hope that's the case because at least somebody's getting some use out of them.
I mean, can you imagine how you would explain that to, you know, your family or something? Like you live in Brunei and one day, just on a good day, the Sultan is like, "Hey, Scott, you want a Mercedes?" I would love it.
He rolls up in his Rolls Royce. oh, by the way, the Sultan, this is another kind of weird little quirk, I guess, you know, that the Sultan always, at all times, 24/7, has a Rolls Royce out in front of the palace that is constantly running. They never shut it off.
Whoa.
It runs all the time. It's ready to go at a moment's notice for him. It Rolls Royce.
That's
cool. And I thought it was kind of a neat little fact. So he's a car guy too, but imagine if he did roll up in his you know, great big Rolls Royce and say, "Guess what I've got for you? I've got a very low miles Mercedes for you. It's got some kind of funny features to it. It might be yellow. I'm not sure. But what do you think? Do you want it?"
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Your Highness.
Yeah, you might have to deal with a little bit of mold mitigation, but other than that, it's pretty good.
I don't know how to speak to royalty, Scott. I would probably accidentally get myself executed because I would be too casual.
You know, I'm sure it doesn't happen like that. I don't know what the case is here.
They probably send out a servant.
Yeah, maybe it's given to you know, some government employees or something. You know, that or as bonuses.
It's like a job well done.
This is all wild speculation.
Yeah, we don't know.
Who knows what's going on? And honestly, that's the thing. When we dug into this, you know, start to look around, you're going to find so many varying stories about what's happening here. So many conflicting reports of how many cars in the collection, the cars that are there in the collection, like that Koenigsegg that I mentioned. No idea. I saw it mentioned one time, so I thought I'd throw it in there. But the fact remains that, yes, there are rows and rows and rows and thousands of vehicles there. Who owns all of them? Who owned all of them, at, you know, from the start, from the get-go? Probably Prince Jeffrey, but the Sultan, he may have his own massive collection still growing somewhere that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Just an interesting tale, I guess.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we close our story for today. We hope that you enjoyed hearing about the Sultan of Brunei's car collection as much as we enjoy presenting on it. If you have a car collection that you want us to cover, let us know, because I'm telling you, Scott, I'm digging these car collection episodes.
Yeah, I am too. We've had a few, and there's some real surprises in there.
Yeah, there always is, because you never know what people will decide they have to collect once they get in that mindset. Mm-hmm. If you want to check out some of those car collection podcasts that we have been talking about, visit our website, carstuffshow.com, where you can listen to all 600 plus of our podcasts. some candidly better than others, but you know, we're getting our sea legs once upon a time.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's been a while.
It has been a long time, my friend. And we're always looking for new episodes. So if you want to help us out, remember that our best episodes come from listener suggestions, and you can talk to us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. You can send us an email directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.